from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
It was cheaper to do it but through international trade, and that all works fine. But if there's something that, look, if you think this is going to be a long-term issue, then what are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, well, we'll start producing them here.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Gary Wolfram, our first guest on today's program. Dr. Wolfram is William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy, Director of Economics and Professor of Political Economy at Hillsdale College. We talk at length with Dr. Wolfram about our supply chain issues. Dr. Wolfram, thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me again.
We want to discuss the supply chain this time around, and it's become a phrase that people have been hearing more and more in the news. We have supply chain issues. Things aren't here because of the supply chain. When we use that word, that phrase, supply chain, what do we mean? What are we talking about?
Well, what we really mean is that rather than you making everything in your factory, you get parts from all over the world and you then assemble them. So if you're an automobile company and you're making a car here in, let's say you have a factory in Michigan and you're making a car, the chips that you are using to put in that car are coming from China, or they're coming from Vietnam or some other place. And so they have to move through the supply chain. That's why it's called supply chain. So it'll be produced in a factory in China, and then it'll be put on a truck or something, or a train, and moved to a port, and then it'll be put on a ship. Then that ship will sail to the United States. It'll get to the port of Savannah, or it'll get to the port of Long Beach. Then it'll have to be, and it's all in, and all these things are, put into containers. All sorts of different things are put into the container that's going to get shipped to Long Beach. Then it has to get unloaded from the ship. Mm-hmm. It has to get stored somewhere, at the port. And then a truck has to come and get it and transport it to Detroit. Or a train will have to take it to Detroit. They try to produce in what's called just in time. So they don't want to have, lots and lots of stuff coming around. What they hope is that when you're building the factory, what happens is the chips get there, you put them in the truck, you put them in the car that you're building, and they go out the door, and you don't have to store thousands and thousands of chips off in another storage facility while you're trying to build the cars. And so that all works, and it works very smoothly until you get a disruption in the supply chain.
I want to come back to that in a little bit, but where do we see, or do we see specific places in the supply chain that are plugged up, that are causing the delays that people are seeing, whether it be for chips or whether it be for food in some instances, or toys, the holidays approach? Where are we seeing those problems crop up?
Well, there's a large problem with regard to chips, because they're used in nearly everything. They're used in your phone, they're used in your car, they're used all over the years, probably used in your furnace or whatever. And so that is a significant problem, has been in this particular part. But there's also a problem in the ports. You've probably, saw about Long Beach and LA, but there's also a big backup in Savannah, Georgia. And that's part of that's been caused by, a shortage of truck drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there's a movement. Okay. That's what we've had, is a series of unfortunate events.
Dr. Gary Wolfram here talking with us about the supply chain. You described for us a few moments ago this elaborate multinational train, rail, boat, plane. It's complicated. How does it, how did it work so well? How do all those things come together to make sure the chips are there when they should be, not earlier, and there's not too many? How does that all work?
Well, it's sort of interesting. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, markets work. If you can have a faster way of doing it and it's less expensive, then what will happen is people will start to demand that particular product. And so the chips were cheaper to produce in China than they were here. And then for a while, you know, everything was working. The ships were going. I was hiring ships. So I hired storage facilities to store the containers until we came to get them. If everything's working well, then I'll say, hey, that's a cheaper way to do it than if we run into problems. And so, the magic of markets was making that happen. And once you start to get a disruption, then there's a response. But it takes time to do that. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to just turn around and do that in a 6-week time period. So I'm going to guess the supply chain issues, they're getting better. So that's, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in markets, but it was cheaper to do it, but through international trade, and that all works fine. But if there's something if you think this is going to be a long-term issue, then what are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, well, we'll start producing them here. Now, they'll be more expensive to produce here, but the total cost will be less, mm-hmm. because you won't have this, this worry about the shortages in the supply chain should this happen again. Who knows? Is COVID going to be a long-term problem? Are we always going to, Amazon was out, you know, what did they do? They had a big increase in the wages that they were paying, right? They're giving everybody, bonuses and the like to work here. I think Amazon hired like 45,000 new people or something. There is a response. The problem is not as big as it was, but is it going to be solved in the next 6 months? I'm going to guess it's probably going to take a year to get things more organized and a different way of doing it. And maybe you end up with more truck drivers because wages of truck drivers start going up because now we need the truck drivers. Mm-hmm. And so, it will settle down, but it's going to take a while.
Some people looking at the boats and ships off the coast ask a question like, well, why don't you just fly that cargo in? Avoid the ports, fly it in. Would that disturb the supply chain as is? Too much disruption? And B, is there even the capacity to do something like that? Those ships are massive, and there's so many of them.
And they're massive, and imagine trying to fly the stuff in. It's going to be, I mean, imagine flying your family somewhere over Christmas break. And you'll see, well, what if I was trying to fly, you know, a 50,000 ton container, you know, that's probably just not an option. I mean, to move something from Vietnam or China or wherever you're moving it from, I mean, ship is the cheapest way to move the thing. Because you know, if there's an ocean in between you and the other place, you know, you can't drive,
right.
drive it. So you gotta, you know, it's probably not, there'll be some things that you could fly. The vast majority of the product is going to have to be moved by ship. And then it's, you know, then you've got, how are we going to deal with this backlog at the ports? And that says, how are we going to deal with the shortage of truck drivers? And that's an issue.
Dr. Gary Wolfram, he is William Simon Professor of Economics and Public Policy, Director of Economics and Professor of Political Economy at Hillsdale College, as we talk about the supply chain. Dr. Wolfram, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me again.
Up next, we talk with James Golden, longtime producer and call screener for the Rush Limbaugh radio program, about his new book, Rush on the Radio. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of Fair Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wing Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance is now open at 3673 Eureka Way. Physical therapists Kevin Elo and Rachel Lang have a combined 29 years of experience in helping those who've suffered orthopedic injuries, strains, and sprains. Kevin has worked with the USA Gymnastics team, NFL Combine, and professional BMX riders. He's also helped members of Cirque du Soleil get back into action. Rachel works closely with seniors and is also a group fitness instructor and adept at returning people to an active lifestyle. Both Kevin and Rachel at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance are accepting new clients. Give them a call today, 530-533-5030. If you are in need of physical therapy, talk to the experts at Pro Rehab Physical Therapy and Sports Performance at 3673 Eureka Way. Call 530-533-5030. That's 530-533-5030 today.
Riverfront Playhouse presents It's a Wonderful Life, a radio play based on the story The Greatest Gift by Philip Van Doren Stern and adapted by Joe Landry, directed by John Welsh. This beloved holiday classic comes to life as a 1940s radio broadcast. Join the cast and bring a few dozen characters to the stage as the story of George Bailey unfolds one fateful Christmas Eve. December 3rd through the 18th at the new Riverfront Playhouse, downtown on California Street. Tickets available online at riverfrontplayhouse.net. Brought to you by Cornerstone Bank and this station.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For more information about Hillsdale College, if you're a prospective student, a friend of the college, or alumni, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by James Golden. You might know him as Bo Snerdley, the longtime producer and call screener for the Rush Limbaugh radio program. He has a new book out, Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years, hardcover, ebook, audiobook as well. James, thanks so much for joining us.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask right at the beginning, the Bo Snerdley name, tell people where that came from. Was it simply a name for you? Was it a character? Was Bo Snerdley essentially you with a different name? How should people think about what they heard from you on the Rush Limbaugh show?
Well, there were always Snerdleys with the Rush Limbaugh program from the time the show was syndicated, but no one remembers the other Snerdleys. There was Marvis Snerdley. There was Mervyn Snerdley. What happened was, at the very beginning, before I started working with Rush, there was an arrangement. When Rush first began with WABC as the flagship station, that they would provide the call screener and an engineer. Well, one of the call screeners that was assigned to the show was a young woman who was extremely liberal, had liberal friends, and didn't want them to know she was associated with anything conservative. So name Marva Snerdley came up, and that's what he was called. After Marva, there was Mervyn. And Marva didn't last too long. And Mervyn didn't last too long either. So when I was rotated on the show, the first day I was on there, Rush asked me, well, right before the show, I had taken in some stories for him to take a look at, which was usual custom. And Rush asked me, well, you know, everybody's got to be a Snerdley. What Snerdley do you want to be? I didn't have a clue. I looked down on his desk. Back then we had this thing called newspapers. Daily News, to a back page sports story where Bo Jackson had done something or another. And I looked at it and said, well, okay, Bo. Little did I know that 33 years later, here would be Bo Snerdley still standing among us.
James, take us back to the early years of the national Rush Limbaugh show, where Rush comes to New York. He's on the WABC there and beginning a national footprint, and there you are working with him. How did those early days of the program work? How did the two of you develop your trust, your working relationship on the program? Did you know early on what it would become?
No, I did not. I had a feeling that it was going to be huge. I think anyone that listened to Rush from the very first show knew that he was different, knew that he had a unique set of skills, and that he was just on fire. I mean, every show was just great. And it was unlike anything else that was on the radio at that time. I met Rush the very first day he came to New York. I don't know about coming to New York. I met him the very first day he was coming into the ABC headquarters, where WABC was. I was, in my prior life, the music director of WABC when it was a music station, still the iconic top 40 station in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I one studio producing their last music show, went into another and produced their first talk show. I knew the president of ABC Radio Networks, Ed McLaughlin, who turned out to be, after he retired, one of Rush's broadcast partners. So Rush was walking in with Ed on his first day there. I was coming out of the building. I met them both, and we had a conversation. During the conversation, as I understood what Rush was getting ready to do, I made the remark, wow, it sounds like you're going to be bigger than Paul Harvey. Little did I know that Rush would completely upend everything in radio, and also little did I know that my life would be intertwined with him. As I mentioned earlier, I wasn't the first call screener to work with him. I was about the third or fourth. And once we were on the show, everything clicked. Now, up before that time, I was working on other shows, but anytime I saw a story that I thought would interest Russ, I would take it to him. Mm. Develop a friendship very early on. But everybody was friends with, everyone loved Russ. You know, he was just such a, it's so different than what people might think. Tongue-in-cheek bombastic on the air wasn't who he was off the air. He was really a quiet guy, reserved, really humble, always so polite to everybody. Everybody loved him, and everybody loved Rush, and everybody with ears for radio knew that this was something special. So when I worked on the show, when I first began with Rush after that first day, I mean, we clicked. We were both very passionate about radio. I have been since I was a 14-year-old kid and first walked into a radio station. And Rush, of course, was just Mr. Radio. I mean, he understood the dynamics of radio, meaning the radio performance. He understood all the nuances of the business. He understood radio inside out. So what a pleasure to work with him.
Talking with James Golden. His book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. Listeners, James, of course, felt like they knew Rush and were friends with Rush. That is the intimacy of the great radio host. You being so close to him for so long, how much do you think listeners knew the real Rush? Did it come through in the way that you experienced him on a day-to-day basis?
Yes, and that is because Rush engendered trust. He revealed a lot of his own life, the struggles that he went through. No, every human being has flaws, and Rush was open about his flaws. But at the same time, and that made him vulnerable, but he did it in such a way to engender trust. Also, you know, Rush did things that helped the audience trust him. He would give the other side of a story and then go into detail as to why he was in opposition to it with news. So you got, long before there was fair and balanced, that was the presentation that Rush was doing. He wasn't just saying something, I believe this, I believe this, and I believe this person is wrong or that person is wrong. He explained their position from the news report and then nuked. He also was really open about his values and what he believed.
Mm-hmm.
And very persuasive. So when he spoke about something, it resonated. And that also conferred to the advertisements. When Russ would do a live spot, the advertisers saw their product most of the time take off like never before. That's the reason we had new advertisers on the show at the time that later would become household names and nationwide companies. Because Rush had earned that kind of trust with his listening audience.
James, we'll pause right there. We'll come back in a moment and talk more about Rush, you, and the new book, Rush on the Radio. James Golden with us. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Reading Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Reading. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
No mountain I can't climb, there's no tower too high, no plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California.
I think my dad's gone crazy.
And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. In response to COVID-19, NFI has scheduled online Zoom classroom sessions for CCW and CCW Renewal. These online courses will be followed up with live fire range training, which will complete your certification. Follow-on range training is done with the same great instructors you've come to know and love. Give us a call today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
This is the Cigar of the Month from Tobacco and Brew, brought to you by Liga Privada. The Underground Sun Grown is the perfect balance of Nicaraguan long filler tobacco. Draped in a lovely Connecticut sun grown wrapper, this stick received a 92 rating. With hints of spice, wood, and espresso, this robust cigar ends on notes of cinnamon. Come down to the best cigar shop around, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed, a show on every other Sunday, 8 to 9. Are you awake? Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you realize you're in an information war where we're losing our country? It's time to stand up and defend your freedoms, my brothers and sisters. Americans don't care what color you are. Those of the past do.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Redding Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, talking with James Golden, or Bo Snerdly, Rush Limbaugh's producer and call screener for 30 years. His new book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. James Rush was, as you point out, just a radio genius, and he talked often about his special relationship with his radio affiliates, his stations that have been with him for 30 years, some from the very beginning. He did the TV show for a little while, but this was a show that was never on satellite radio. Didn't do a lot of podcasting. There was the Rush 24/7 audio available, of course, but Rush really wanted his show to be something experienced communally, that everyone experienced together at the same time on the radio. That was special. You continue that at 77 WABC in New York. Do you guys have conversations about that off the air, about why radio was the perfect medium for a guy like Rush?
Rush talked about that, and he not only talked about it with me off the air at times, but he talked about it on the air, that he never wanted to cannibalize those affiliates who enabled him to be so successful. He respected the radio affiliates. He respected the decision that they made to choose him and was honored by it. And he valued the relationship that he had with each and every radio affiliate in the market. He had 600 stations. You could name a call letter of some stations. He'd know exactly who they were and pretty much when they came on board. He loved the radio business. He loved the affiliate stations that picked him up. He was honored to have them as an affiliate, and he let it be known to them and to those of us working with him how deeply he cared about maintaining that relationship.
There were critics, of course, James, and you write about some in the book, and today's cancel culture philosophy certainly was in effect years prior when it came to the Rush Limbaugh program. It was always funny for fans who heard these critics that they never seemed to actually listen to the show. They didn't know anything about Rush or the program. I was a program director that carried Rush's show. And just thinking back to the Sandra Fluck incident, that seemed to be some sort of flashpoint. That was the heaviest that we ever felt sort of this push from the left to get Rush off the air. They thought that was the opportunity to do so. They threw everything in the kitchen sink at affiliates, at program directors to try to convince them to do something about it. Internally, did you guys feel that pressure? Were you insulated? Was there ever a time when you thought that it was really heaviest for you guys?
I think that you identified correctly. I think probably the biggest public pressure, which was the Sandra Fluck incident. And I know personally how it was misconstrued. I know what he was trying to say, what he was saying,
mm-hmm.
and to integrate her. It was to point out the fact that this particular person was asking for the government to take care of her individual needs. And what does that make her? He apologized for that, something he rarely did in the light. But this was coming into an election year, and it was the Obama machine in full gear, along with the people over at Media Matters who never stopped their endless criticism. And most of the time, of course, Media Matters is completely factually wrong, takes things out of context on purpose. And the left did try to cancel him. So, yeah, we kind of felt that one. That one, yeah, there was a lot of pressure, and people were worried about it because they were attacking the advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an old pain. Rush also, though, did something because of that I think helped many people besides the show. We did a real deep dive, he did, into who these critics were.
Yes.
And what we was there were people on Twitter that were a small group that were amplifying themselves by the use of bots. So make it appear before advertisers that they were hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people complaining, when in fact it was just a small group. And he exposed that on the air. Now, there are still a lot of corporate heads that don't know that because their people in their own communications department keep them isolated from what really goes on. But a lot of the public is beginning to understand that many of these pressure groups on the left do not have the numbers they claim to have, but they wield an extraordinary amount of power because their critical talking points are amplified by an unquestioning mainstream press who has the same agenda that they do. And this cancel culture until recently was used to take out their political enemies. The thing is now it's backfiring.
Mm-hmm.
And liberals themselves are finding themselves canceled, and not so much conservatives. So this whole cancel culture thing, Russ was one of the first people they ever tried to use it on. I remember Elizabeth Slaughter back in the early 90s tried to congressionally take Rush's freedom of speech away with something called the Hush-Rush Bill. That's
right.
What we called it, where legislatively they wanted to deny him a place on talk radio. These people on the left will stop at nothing, absolutely nothing, toward their acquisition of power and to become the only voice. And they want to literally quote any kind of dissent or free speech all while claiming that they are tolerant. They are the most intolerant people in this country.
Final question for James Golden. You might know him as Bo Snerdly from Rush's show. His book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years. When Paul Harvey passed away, no one really replaced Paul Harvey, James. Rush is that same sort of singular talent, truly irreplaceable. How do you see his legacy continuing? What do you want to see in these coming years? Certainly the Rush Revere books will live on, and his charity efforts will live on. How do you see Rush's legacy, both, I guess, personally and within the industry?
In the industry, I don't know, because this talk radio family, all of us in talk radio, you look at the amount of money that we have raised, you look at the philanthropy that came from Catherine and Rush to the families of fallen first responders. When children lose their parents in the line of duty, they're not worried about the politics. Their worries go more toward how am I going to maintain the payments on this house? And that's what Rush and Catherine and others in our industry, so that part will live on. I think Rush's efforts in education will live on. His original story of Thanksgiving has spread like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
Even though but this year, the story is still being told. We have people now, people ask me, well, what about the people that are in his time slot? I don't know Dan Bongino personally, but we've communicated on Twitter, direct message many times. He's a wonderful human being. I know Buck, he was a guest host, and he and Clay are doing a great job. They're holding on to a lot of stations that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Eric is also a former guest host and a friend. And so I'm in a position where I can wish everybody well and hope that they succeed, and there's certainly room for everyone to succeed. Will there be another Rush? No. But you can see the same kind of fearlessness that Rush had. Look at Tucker Carlson. He comes under so much fire, but yet he stands firm and does the kind of stories that he thinks are right for him to do. That's the same trait Rush had. Look at Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA. So Rush's legacy is going to live on for generations to come in people that we are just beginning to see emerge, in some people that are already well-known figures in the talk radio and television space. But the Limbaugh legacy, his legacy will live on in countless ways. I do believe that.
James Golden, also known as Bo Snerdly from the Rush Limbaugh program, his new book is Rush on the Radio, a tribute from his sidekick of 30 years, hardcover, ebook, audiobook. You can go to jamesgolden.com to order or to find more, jamesgolden.com. And you can find him, too, at 77 WABC in New York. James, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much, guys. You know what? This has been such a pleasure. I would sure like to come one day and hang out with you guys.
I think that would be a fantastic idea to make that happen. James, we appreciate it.
All righty. Take care now.
Up next, we talk with Elizabeth Genovese, a 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College, recently back on campus as part of our Visiting Writers series. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining. The birds are singing. And there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that. And it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple. Naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet. Mount Shasta spring water.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless.
Hi, I'm Janet McCarn, one of the owners of Orchard Nutrition Center. We are proud to be joining KCNR in sending holiday greetings and wishes to all our veterans and those currently serving our country, and to their families waiting at home. It is a huge sacrifice they make for our country, and Orchard Nutrition Center is proud to honor our veterans every day with a 10% in-store discount. Sending warm wishes from the Orchard Nutrition Center family to all our veterans today and all year long. Thank you for your service.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We say hello and thank you to our listeners at WBCK 95.3 FM in Battle Creek, Michigan. Thank you for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined now by Elizabeth Genovese, a 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College and back on campus as part of our Visiting Writers series. She currently teaches English at a community college in Tennessee, teaches community creative writing, also has published 3 collections of stories, A Different Harbor, where there are 2 or more, and Posing Nude for the Saints. Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You mentioned to me before we started, it's your first time here back on campus in about a decade or so. What do you notice? What's different?
Well, I had never seen the gorgeous chapel, the new student union where the cafeteria is. I mean, the campus looks absolutely incredible. It's just beautiful from start to finish. And I checked out the insides of all those new buildings, and they just seem like really wonderful student spaces, places for people to study and get to know each other. It's lovely.
So on your writing, you recently were an O. Henry Prize winner. People who are not familiar with the literary world, what does that mean? And what did you write to be considered as a O. Henry Prize winner?
Well, the O. Henry, it's an anthology that's been around for a very long time, and it's published once a year. And what happens is literary journals kind of across the country, editors will nominate a story or two for the prize and send them in to this committee, and then the committee will look at those stories and pick, I can't remember exactly how many were in the last one, but, you know, somewhere between, like, say, 10 and 15. And then if they're chosen, then they get published in that anthology. It's a, you know, prestigious award. It's a nice thing to have on your CV when you're reaching out to publishers and presses. And the story that was nominated was my piece, Irises, which is in my third book, Posing Nude for the Saints. And I had submitted that to the Cimarron Review, and the editor there really loved it, and she put it forward as a nominee for the O. Henry, and that's how that happened.
So how would you describe your writing, your stories in your published works? Where do you find your inspiration?
I would call it realistic literary fiction. It's very character-focused. You know, my process is, it's actually a hard thing to describe. It's not something that I do kind of from an intellectual point. It's more a matter of listening to dreams, listening to sort of, I call them messages, kind of coming through the unconscious. And the way I see it is that, you know, a writer is, you always have your antennae up and you're picking up signals from the world around you, images and, you know, thoughts about people. And these things start to constellate in your unconscious, the larger significance of what you see and hear, and you incubate those things. And then, you know, one day you just wake up and you realize you're on the cusp of an actual story, and these aren't just loose images anymore. They're actually creating a picture, and that's when you start writing. So that's kind of what the process looks like for me.
How do you know, or how are you comfortable when one of your stories is finished, that you think you've completed this image, this thought that's come to you? How do you know when it's done?
It's a very visceral feeling. I've written stories before where they're technically finished, but I don't feel right about it, you know, for weeks after. It's the sensation you have when there was something you were supposed to do today and you forgot to do it. Like, you know, it's not really done. And when I have that sensation, I give myself some distance, and then I'll come back to it, and I usually see what's wrong, and then I can kind of tackle that problem and resolve it. I guess in a way, though, you know, probably most writers would tell you that nothing ever feels finished in the sense of being perfect. You never feel that you're happy with something. And, you know, the people who are close to me, my husband, you know, they give me a hard time because I'll finish something and, you know, think, okay, I think this is pretty good. And then 6 months later, it's, oh, you know what, I hate this. This is terrible. I'm not going to submit this anywhere. And that's sort of your classic writerly self-loathing.
Mm-hmm.
So things might be technically done, but I think you always have a sense that you can make it better.
You also do some private writing coaching, mm-hmm. as well. When you're working with these writers, what are some of the common hurdles, problems that they have that you end up helping them or working with them to get through?
Well, I would say most people probably expect that answer to be somewhere along the lines of issues of craft, but it's really more issues of mentality, and it seems to me that new writers tend to fall into one of two categories. They're on two different sides kind of this spectrum, where over on one side, they're very orderly people, and they tend to over-intellectualize the process of writing, so they want to be completely in control. They want to have both hands on the wheel all the time. These are the types of writers who want to outline the story before they write it down to the last paragraph. And those people, you have to kind of teach them or train them to, as I said before, kind of have their ear open to the mysterious and to the unconscious and to dreams and to things that are kind of inexplicable rather than something they can fully control. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have the extreme opposite, the writers who their work ends up being, it's vivid and it's interesting, but it's more sentimental, or it's kind of a loose cannon where they don't have a sense of direction. There's no unifying purpose. And that's because they don't have enough of what the people on the other side have. Mm-hmm. They're not intellectualizing enough. They're not thinking about, okay, what is my purpose? What's the master effect I'm after here? So it's all about addressing that and kind of trying to find a balance between the two. Once you have a little of both, then you can create something that's unified and has purpose, but also has that kind of mystery, that thing that haunts people for weeks after they read it.
You're here talking with some of our English students, some of our creative writers here on campus. What do you hope they will remember from your message? What are some of the questions that they're asking you?
Well, you know, I guess I'm really hoping that they will be encouraged to pursue writing, the ones who are genuinely interested, and there are definitely people here who are. And in the submissions I saw, I did actually get to see some fiction from quite a few students, and there's real talent there, genuine talent. I was really impressed with what I saw, with their attitude, with, you know, their mentality. And what I've been trying to convey is how incredibly important it is that we have conservatives who contribute to the arts, because the literary arts in particular, they've been so completely hijacked mm-hmm. by the ideologically possessed. It's getting harder and harder now to find a freshly published novel or story that doesn't have an agenda. And no one is better prepared to write good quality literary work than a Hillsdale graduate, because they have the background. They have the foundations. I know so many people who they call themselves writers, but they don't read. They don't know canonical literature. They don't know the classics. They even have a disdain for those things. There's no reverence for the past. And Hillsdale students have this incredible gift where even if it was never in their minds to study creative writing like it was with me, they've been studying it all along because they've been reading the best literature that's ever been written. So they're already kind of taking it into their bones.
Mm-hmm.
What good literature looks like, and, you know, how to develop a character and how to write a novel that fulfills its promise. And I hope that they use that background to create something.
Is your path into sort of the writing field and what you've done and having your works published and publishing these collection of short stories, is that a repeatable path? Is that a path that students here can emulate?
Yeah, I believe it is. I mean, most writers are, they're going to be very negative if you ask a question like that and say, oh, you know, this is the field of starving artists mm-hmm. where getting a job is almost impossible. It depends on how hard you're willing to work. If you're really serious about this and you're committed, this isn't something you dabble in. It's not a hobby. Yes, I do believe that these students can get their work published someday. Or perhaps maybe they choose a different route and they create the literary press,
mm-hmm.
which would be just as amazing, if not more so. And, you know, they can go get degrees in fine arts and then teach in schools where they can make a difference, and they can teach new writers and teach them the literature they need to move forward. So, yeah, I would never say, you know, this is a one in a million situation that I have, because I'm just not that special. I work really hard, and that's about the end of it. So if you work hard and you have a Hillsdale background, I think all these things are possible.
And you can find more at ElizabethGeneviesFiction.org. Her three collection of stories, A Different Harbor, Where There Are Two or More, and Posing Nude for the Saints. She's on campus here as a visiting writers, part of the Visiting Writers Series, and a 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College. Elizabeth Genovese, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Gary Wolfram from Hillsdale's Economics Department, talking about the supply chain issues in the country. James Golden, also known as Bo Snerdly, Rush Limbaugh's former producer, on his new book, Rush on the Radio. And Elizabeth Genovese, 2006 graduate of Hillsdale College, part of our Visiting Writers series here on campus. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews, including James Golden this week, or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Follow the show on Twitter at Hillsdale Radio and find us on Facebook. Email us your thoughts at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is the place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.